Welcome to ITE 1, Module 10, Part 3. Yesterday was our supplemental troubleshooting lecture. For those of you who are here, I think we're down to the final few and the people who will actually possibly graduate. So congratulations, guys, for sticking with it. For those of you who are not here and listening to this, and except Karen, because you know who you are and we know where you are, you may want to contact me and talk to me about what your plans are. So get in touch with me at my email address, and we will sort something out.
That was sort of sinister. We know who you are and where you live. No, I'm just... No, I know what you meant.
Actually, we do. And
we do.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do.
And, we'd like to see as many people as possible pass, and if you're having trouble, we would like to assist you, and if you can't be bothered, we'd like to know so that we don't trace you. Thank you.
That's basically it. Everybody who has been doing their labs, you guys are rock stars. I've got a bunch to grade. I'll do it. And you should get some labs back fairly soon. But way to go on pushing really hard, you guys. You're doing excellent. All right. You know, funnily enough, you know what we're going to talk about next? First up today is time management, stress reduction, and all of that good stuff. So, there you go. And we all need to deal with our stress, and we all need to manage our time better, including me. I'm not great at time management. A lot of us are not great at time management. That's okay. We will need to learn to deal with this, though, when working at a call center. The first thing we're going to talk about is ergonomics. Can anybody tell me what that means?
Making sure that your work area is set up comfortably.
How you have your hands placed on the keyboard, and how your posture, how you're sitting.
It's body position and ease of movement, and how you're positioned to do your job. That's absolutely right. You'll be spending a lot of time at your workstation, so that it's important that your space is laid out well for you. Someone want to say something? Sorry. Somebody was keyed. Okay. A bad ergonomic design... Huh? Okay. That is weird. I am not! A bad ergonomic design can make it very unpleasant for you to do your job. You'll be reaching and stretching and uncomfortable, and it won't be so good. So make sure you can easily access and use your phone and headset. Adjust your chair to a comfortable height, and if you have a screen set up, you need to make sure that you are not tilting your head up or down to look at it. If you use speakers, make sure they are loud enough that you do not have to bend forward to hear them. If you do this, you are going to seriously strain your back and neck. So if you are using speakers, you need to turn them up loud enough so that you can hear them easily.
I've seen people do this. I've done that.
Oh, I do it. I'm horrible about it. Really.
She's always getting roused on, actually. And I usually wander over and poke her in the side and go, sit up. Because if I don't, about an hour and a half later, I get an, oh, can you put my back back in? So this is serious. try and...
Yeah. Sorry, the phrasing of that was funny. I'm sorry.
It's all good. That's okay.
I think, and the other thing is that, in fact, if you want bad ergonomics, come here. Our chairs are shocking, but nobody's got any funding for new chairs, so we sit and we put up with them. But
work
yeah,
interesting too.
Yeah. So honestly, and if this is bothering your workmates, you're going to have to wear headphones. Now, women with hair issues and we're afraid that they're going to have a thinning hairline because of your headsets, or guys too, you've got a couple of options for this. You can wear a headband, a padded headband, or if you get some Sennheisers like I've got, they've got a little pad underneath the headset so that it cushions your hairline from where your headphones go.
So that you don't have just metal on your head.
Yeah, or plastic, because you can get hair creases from headphones.
Yeah, I think my free talks do that sometimes.
Don't worry about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, those are not great for your ears, though, for long-term use.
The only kind I can think of that are is here in the States you can get. They're called AirDrives Active Earbuds, and they go in front of your ear, and they have like a wire that goes behind your ear, and it's this little tiny round thing about the size of the end of your like your fingertip that sits in front of your ear and projects the sound in your ear. They're not really loud, but you can wear them forever.
One of the other problems with earbuds in a work environment is infections. You can get lots of middle ear infections from earbuds that are not kept clean. And in fact, sometimes some of the open headphones and stuff are better because you're not likely to get as many ear infections and nasties from wearing earbuds.
They're right if you're sitting lounging listening to your iPod or whatever for 30 minutes an hour, but not so much for long-term computer use. It's not the best idea. In college classes, a lot of people do it. I keep a thing of earbuds just in case for emergencies when I don't have headphones. And I use earbuds quite a bit, but not when I'm working on my computer for a long period of time.
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning...
a set of headphones that work for you, keep them and don't let anyone else use them. If you
can
at all help it.
Yeah.
The other thing you've got to keep in mind is that, and some people put up with the most horrendous earphones, and then they go and get some real ones, and they don't know what they were missing. And it's probably important that if, for us anyway, guys, if you're using these things for 6 to 8 hours a day, and some of us do spend 6 to 8 hours a day on the computer, it's important to have really good ones because it does make a difference. I mean, the average person doesn't wear earphones for the length of time we do, generally speaking, unless they work in like radio or whatever, and then they've usually got a set of good cans anyway. I mean, classic example, we got Grace a good set of headphones when she came over. We got her some Beodynamics, and now she's quite happily using a set of Sennheiser 555s. And from a subconscious perspective, she's a hell of a lot happier to put the headphones on than the old flat, foamy ear squashers that we originally had.
Until they broke.
I love the PS100s, and they're cheaper. They're pretty good.
All headphones break, Drew. We've resigned ourselves to that, and especially Sennheisers and every other brand that you love. And the more you love it, the sooner it will break. This is how the universe works.
And the harder it'll be to replace. Another really good brand and very portable, if you can find these, is a Sony portable headset. They're fairly comfortable and tiny. I mean, they will fit in my little fanny pack. So... they're not cheap, but they're not like hugely expensive. They're under $100, and if you can get yourself a pair of these, really, really great headphones.
I find Sony too basey.
There is a site called headphones.com, and it actually has like reviews of like headphones, not just based on sound, but comfort and all kinds. I was like, whoa.
So does headphones.com.au. There's a .au of that as well.
Okay, cool.
Okay, any questions on audio or headphones or any of that?
Make sure that the where you're plugging it in is not very far away either. Plugging headphones into the back of the computer where the speakers go can make things really difficult, and if that's the situation you're in, get a headphone extender cable. So that the headphone jack
is
not...
Yes, they do sell those,
in an
which is
awkward
really good.
They're cool, and Y-splitters are even cooler. That's where you can plug two pairs of headphones into the same computer. When I use those at work, when I train people with jogs.
Oh, there's another thing. I keep losing them. One time I bought about six and just scattered them everywhere throughout my house and back.
Yeah, they would
that,
probably.
I think that's the way things go with Y-splitters.
The other thing I'd warn people, and I actually saw somebody do this, don't plug headphones and speakers onto a Y-splitter so that you've got the headphones and speakers plugged in at the same time because you're lazy. The loading on headphones is different to the loading on speakers, and you can actually damage your amplifiers by running them both in parallel off the same thing.
Ooh, good to know.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is...
on the front of computers don't always work. Thank you, Realtek, for making it really hard to adjust those under XP in your nasty manager.
They may not have even been wired in on a lot of them. A lot of people don't bother wiring in the high-definition connector. It's too hard, and they just leave them unwired.
Yeah, I didn't bother wiring in my...
The other thing to keep in mind is if you are using headphones and stuff and you are dealing with long cords and stuff, it is actually cheaper and safer to have a headphone extender cable than it is to actually have the headphones in plugged into the computer, trip over the headphones, and then break the jacks in the back of your sound card. Because it's harder to replace a sound card than it is to replace an extender cable.
That is starting to happen, actually. One of my jacks is getting broken, and I was wondering if it's possible to, like, reroute to a different jack, because I've got, like, six of the freaking things.
Well, if you're handy with a soldering iron, you can, but it's not for the faint of heart.
Just go get a new sound card, Drew.
This is a deck, though, Grace.
Okay. You should not have to bend your wrist to use your keyboard and mouse. If you have a desk that isn't really ergonomically very good, you can get a very nice wrist rest. And these are very good, and they're really cheap. You can get them with jelly in them. You can get them with these little beads in them. I had one that I loved, and it's back in Colorado and gone, but it was super nice.
I don't really find them all that helpful, but...
I think it depends on what sort of things de-stress you. Different people are different. Keep in mind that a lot of sighted people probably don't do as much with their hands as far as squishy, squashy, pokey, gropey, draggy stuff as we do, so maybe the stress ball will be less effective if you're vision impaired, if you're used to having stuff in your hands all the time. These are sighted notes, after all.
Another thing is weird at work is we have these, like, it almost looks like coconut matting that our keyboards are on, and I guess it's designed to prevent sliding, but it always seems to crinkle up, and it kind of annoys me. And I'm not quite sure what the deal was, what the idea was there.
I think it's important to make sure that the whole matting is very clearly flattened out and that the edges aren't going to catch on things. That's usually what a lot of people have a problem with, is it needs to be completely flat when it goes down. Otherwise it will tend to crinkle and bend, but yeah, usually it stops things from sliding around the desk.
Hello to Aiden and Lucy who came in. And by the way, Aiden, you're not getting out of your role play. we'll do that at the end of class if you want to do that.
Sure, okay. I didn't get there yesterday because my body betrayed me, and today I forgot that we keep forgetting about the time zone change. I was going to come on at 6, and then I realized, oh, it's 5. Oops.
I've got a program for you. Free program, iPod Touch. We'll make that happen so you can have some alarms go off if you like. Very cool program.
Oh, okay. That'd be cool.
It's really neat. Lucy, you are getting out of your role play because you did it last year. So unless you want to do it again, you don't have to.
Not especially. I enjoyed it the last time.
You got Daphne last year. The last semester.
She got Daphne. And by the way, Lucy, she returned and she was even crazier this time. So if you want to have a listen to what poor Randy got to deal with.
I do, because I was helping Karen on Skype, so I missed some of it, so I definitely can't wait to hear.
It's already up.
It's up.
Oh, it is. Right. Okay,
it just hasn't been announced. I mean, go look in the folders, people. We just haven't quite got to posting to announce yet.
By the way, so are Module 10 and 11 as of last night. I'll actually write an announcement up, but I was so tired last night. I put them up. I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm going to bed. Okay. Speaking of, try to minimize distractions such as noise. Yeah, that does help. Now, guys, this is something important, and unless somebody wants to talk about it here and now, we totally can, but a lot of people feel really private about these sort of things. If you believe you're overly noise sensitive and are open to some suggestions, please talk with me at some point. I've got some really good programs that sensor integration programs that can help and are really good and can actually help you with some of that noise sensitivity, and it does make a lot of difference.
Also, Uncommon Knowledge has a $12.95 hypnosis on noise sensitivity. So there are things out there for noise sensitivity. There's actually a number of different programs. Grace has played with some of the Simonas. There's also Sound Therapy International make one as well. So there's some quite interesting ones that are out there. So yeah, there is stuff out there to help you.
Simonas is quite good. I need to do it again.
Yeah. I actually need, it's been about 10 years, I should probably be redoing my Simonas.
Does the AMI company make one? And
we no.
The
no.
That's for a different problem.
No, I know, but I was asking if they made one as well.
No. Actually,
that's the only problem they solve.
Actually, it's not relevant, and we'll come back to it later, but we Googled up Leonie Feast, and she has an entire meditation company that you can get things from, so there you go.
Yeah, well, that's what I was asking. If that was one of her meditation topics, maybe she'd have more success.
I don't think
that
would make
you
less noise sensitive. I think she'd make you want to pull your hair out from the roots, but... no, not her. But yeah, seriously, if you guys want to have a serious talk about some noise sensitivity stuff, get hold of me and I will try and help you out.
Also, I was really surprised when looking for a pair of headphones. I, of course, didn't buy them because of the price, but Bose does a $300 pair of headphones that I just put on for the heck of it. And I was my jaw dropped as the background sounds of the room just completely faded away. And I thought I was in my own private world, and it was great. I guess it was like noise canceling to the ultra level. So I don't know exactly what noise sensitivity is, but that might fix it.
I would not recommend wearing something like that in a call center environment or out doing basically anything besides sitting in a chair, because you are going to lose also if you have any kind of facial vision. You're going to lose all of that when you have those headphones on, and you may walk into walls, chairs, tables, not hear the person next to you calling out to you, and get into all sorts of trouble.
Oh, yeah. No, I would never recommend actually wearing them when you're moving, but you were talking about, like, I thought you were talking about on a desk, so, you know, I thought you assumed, like, a seated environment.
Oh, absolutely, but that's probably also a bad idea. Nobody's going to be able to wave their hand in front of your face to get your attention in a call center.
They shouldn't be doing that anyway. That's discrimination.
But that's... No. Like, they can't. So you probably shouldn't be wearing noise-canceling headphones really noise-canceling headphones in an environment where people need to get your attention. Because if you're sighted, they can wave their hands in front of your face or signal to you.
Come on, can't they just send you a memo from their iPhone? I mean, this is 2010.
Fair enough.
Something else to be
aware
of.
Yeah, but you might not even be able to hear the iPhone.
Yeah.
If you don't have the headphones plugged into the iPhone.
You set it to vibrate.
Something else to be aware of with noise-canceling headphones, too, is that because you are so in your own little world, and like the ones that actually plug into the wall, I've never really played with them, but I'd like to, you just can't hear anything because it actually generates sort of anti-noise. But the problem I find there, at least, is if someone does want to get my attention, the only option they have is to come up and touch me. But when they do touch me, and I've got no previous idea they were anywhere near me, I tend to get one heck of a fright. So be aware of that as well.
Oh, yeah, that would be.
Yeah, I think most people do. Oh, they do.
They make the dual headsets that the blind people are using.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if I'd missed that in the lecture, but yeah, Plantronics apparently makes it, and yeah, it's really, I was kicking myself black and blue. I wish I'd known about it at my job at NCL, because, yeah, it's apparently really good. It costs $150, but apparently it's really good.
$300.
Is it 300 now?
If you want the one that plugs into your standard telephone in one ear and the computer in the other, $300 a pop, and they custom make them. So good luck. Rehab is having trouble getting a whole bunch of them.
I bet.
Still pretty fantastic that you can get those.
It is cool. They are really.
It is, yeah.
There is also a 10-minute job you can do with a soldering iron and a couple of components, which is what used to happen here before Plantronics started doing them. They used to solder them up here for you. Although they soldered them up in such a way that you got computer in one ear, speech in the other, which drives some people mental.
That'd be much
easier.
You
need phone in one ear?
I think, for me.
Yeah, phone in one ear, computer in the other.
Yeah, that's what these do. That's what these do. But Plantronics is charging quite a bit to do it.
Fair enough. The other thing, you can get some headphones with some SAMe, some noise reduction capabilities. That can be nice. Then people can still yell at you from a little bit away, and you're still going to hear them. And that can be good for reducing noise. All right. Hey, here's one for everybody. Use good time management skills. Stick to a prioritized list of activities. And this is really good. If you write a list down, you can check things off on that list, or allocate a certain amount of time to certain activities every day, and then you won't overload yourself. Does anyone else have any really good time management tips?
I guess a to-do list would be good, is to try to set due dates for things if you can, so that things can be prioritized, I suppose.
To-do lists only work if you check them, though. Keep that in mind.
Yes.
True.
Otherwise, it becomes a to-don't list.
Yeah. I think the setting aside bits of time for different activities is good, because if you get too stuck on one thing, it might get boring and repetitive. But if you actually break it up, then it's not necessarily as bad. Although it's very hard to keep things like that straight when events pop up in your life, and you're basically playing a big game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah. You won't have as much overload and stress if you put a half an hour or an hour aside for certain activities, like your labs or anything else you're doing. Even another good thing to do that for is gaming. If you've got gaming, you can set a certain amount of time aside for that, and when it's not that time, you don't do it.
I tend to talk around on Ventrilo, and so what I would do is say, okay, I'm going to do labs for a while, and then as my reward for having done the labs, now I can talk on Ventrilo and do whatever else I wanted to do and talk to people. That's the other thing I find, is give yourself an incentive for having done whatever it is you've done, even if it's just, okay, and now I'm going to, you know, have that snack now that I'm done with it or whatever.
Yeah, now I'll have that chewy granola bar. Now I'll have that special pasta. Now I'll go order myself pizza because I finished this whole chapter. And save those rewards for that time.
Yeah, this is a really tough one. We're having trouble with this with somebody that I work with, and man, it's tough.
Yeah.
The problem is people can only be helped if they want to be helped. I mean, if somebody's got crummy time management and they don't want to improve it, there's nothing you can do. As the psychologists say, the person's got to want to change.
I actually keep meaning to listen to the stuff that you guys did on time management and studying and all that. You and Geraldine and Carrie, and I never remembered to.
Yeah.
We talked about the postage stamp version was set up an area to study, keep your work area clean, and also to put the time aside and actually put yourself into study and reward yourself at the end, but make sure that you actually take yourself away from the distractions.
Absolutely.
Auto-tune the news will not be conducive to you completing your labs.
No.
You don't say.
Although listening to
who would do that?
Music on Pandora that helps you focus
I
might
don't
be okay.
Know. We don't know anybody who would do that, do
no.
we?
Yeah. Some music can actually help you get things
done. Oh, absolutely.
Done, like I find
maybe you have... maybe you have special music that you play when you study. Because I know some people don't have room to make a study area. I did. I had a desk out in my living room that I would go and sit and do my Kavi work at. And most of the other time, I was seriously sitting on my bed playing with my computer. But, yeah.
Actually, a look on Amazon, speaking of classical music, there is some classical music that's hot and some that's not so hot. There are actually classical music that does help induce the alpha state. I think there's a Hemisync album called Einstein's Dream, and there's a few other ones. So have a look around and see what you can find. I'm sure you can probably find it on Amazon and then buy it on iTunes or whatever you do. And we will not be responsible for any students who use illegal methods to obtain their music. We will just turn two blind eyes.
Yes. Anyone else have any other ideas for time management? Those are mine, and my time management skills aren't that great, so I'm honestly not the one to be talking to you guys about this. So if anyone else has any good ideas, feel free to chime in.
Oh, if I'd known we were doing it this week, I would have had my psychologist friend who does seminars at $750 an hour come in and chat about that.
Hey, well, you can still do that. If you can get your friend to do a presentation for us on a social, I think that would be really good.
Cool. Is Kevin fitting the bill? No, I'm kidding. I can talk to him, though.
We have, like, no money.
I know. I was kidding.
We can help him with
Ventrilo.
Yeah, I'm
going to have to give him Ventrilo, though. What's that?
We can do that. This is not a problem. We'll help him.
If anybody has any, if anybody has any people that they want to do, if anybody knows anybody who's actually got talent and wants to give a presentation in our usual social time slot, or you happen to have talent and you want to give a presentation, talk to us about it, and when we come back next year, we will certainly crank up and have all different presentations and stuff. If you go back to the website under Thursday Chats, because they were Thursday Chats when we did them, I have to rename that folder.
We had a couple of really good ones this year.
We had the one on ITEL, and we had a few other ones on smart homes and all those sorts of things.
There was the voice one.
Yeah, the voice one was good.
Yeah. That was fun. Okay. If there's no other comments on time management, should we continue? All right. Well, your company might have a policy for which calls you must take first. Many organizations want you to take down calls first, which are calls where the whole office is waiting for a server to come back online so they can continue their work. Yes, these are probably the most important calls. If you need to call a customer back, do this at the time you said you would. This is important, and it really improves your reputation as a technician. sorry. Yeah, this really does. And there are some good programs. One I'm going to talk to Aiden about, and it's free, is called Alarmed. And this will allow you to do some really cool things with alarms and timing. You have not only a countdown timer, but you have a super alarm that you can get going, which will allow you to set a pre-alarm a couple hours or however long before the event that will play one sound, and an alarm a little bit later that will play yet another sound. And this is really cool because you can set it up to go off at a certain day or a certain time. So every 2 weeks, I've got one for recycling. And it's really quite a nice program. So if you've got a touch and have any kind of timing issues iPhones as well, you can get this program. Fantastic.
iPhone's a bit better because it has the vibrate.
Yep. So, really, really, highly recommend this program. Totally accessible. Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
And free is always nice. Now, one thing to be aware of, when I was working for Microsoft, we were not allowed to make, well, we didn't do it, but the level 2 technicians were not allowed to make calls after 9 p.m., I believe, because of U.S., customer service laws or telemarketing laws, because essentially, even though they had requested a call back specifically, or at least agreed to a call back when we said, "Do you want us to call you back?" The customers would not, or the laws forbid any. I guess they forbid a company from calling customers back. So, be aware of not to schedule your time for after 9 p.m. I believe their
9 p.m. Yeah. You guys.
Honestly, I would be really upset if tech support called me at 9 o'clock. Anyway, because
you know, what time would you prefer to call back? You know, us to call you back at, and some would say, "Oh, can you call me at 10 in the evening?" No, we can't do that. We can call you between 5 and 7, 7 and 9, that kind of thing.
Talk amongst yourselves, guys. We'll be back in a moment.
I'm going to go find this Alarmed.
There is also a program, I suppose you could do a similar thing with it. How relevant this is to our discussion, I don't know, but it works under XP. I haven't tried it under 7. It was written by a uni student who got sick of missing the bus, and it's called Citrus Alarm Clock, and it's about 500k, and it's very small and free and everything else. And basically, you can set up as many alarms as you like. I think you can only have one like active at a time. I don't know, I don't remember, I haven't played with it in ages. And you can set it to go off any day of the week or any time or whatever, and that's quite a cool little program as well. And basically what it does, it actually plays a song off your computer, which is neat.
Yeah, actually, Jaws, apparently someone wrote to scripts for Jaws, an alarm script for Jaws, which is kind of interesting as well. I haven't actually played with it, but I downloaded it one night, and have yet to try it out.
Back up your default settings, please, because if it does what I think it does, it will probably have to run all the time, and you can really mess things up if you go around in your default scripts file and you don't know what you're doing, or you just miss something. And if you've played with Skype Watch, you know how badly that can go wrong.
Oh, I've done that before. Mistyped something in the script file and had to restore that backup. Yeah, good times.
I've always wanted to get Skype Watch, but I've never bothered. It sounds rather scary or
Skype
easily
talking
breakable.
Does the same thing, and is a lot better. The one thing you need to do, though, and I don't know why we're going here, but Skype Talking, if you have the scripts, though, tell Skype Talking not to read chats. Okay.
Oh, okay. Is it a separate program, Sean, or is it a draw script thing?
Separate Screener independent program.
Oh, wow.
NVDA likes it, too.
But it works with JAWS and stuff?
Yep. I believe it even uses SAPI if you don't have any of those installed, but I'm not sure about that.
Fair enough. I'll have a look. So why do you want it not to read chats?
If you've got the JAWS scripts doing it, then they may both do it.
Okay.
I should have prefaced.
My one reads them when I tell it to. I don't remember if I've got any scripts specifically installed or not. I think I do.
I found it. The aligned thing.
Hello, I'm back. Oh, sorry about that. Oh, okay. So, as I was saying, if you have to call customers back, keep a list and check them off as you call them so you don't forget someone. And honestly, if you're really busy, so you don't call them again. Because if you're really out of it, you'll do this.
Wow.
No, seriously, have them. I haven't done it, but I've had it happen to me. Oh no, you just called me 2 days ago. Oh, yeah, I did. Thank you. Do not give favorite customers faster or better service. When reviewing call boards, do not take only the easy calls, because this is totally unfair to the other technicians. And you know what? Honestly, your bosses and superiors will notice this. They might not say anything for you, but if you don't get a promotion and wonder why, that might be it. Do not take other technicians' calls unless you are told to do so. It's also important to manage stress on the job. Because a job of a technician can be extremely stressful. Here's some tips. Take a moment to compose yourself between calls if you can. It's important to treat each call as a fresh start. Do not carry over frustration from your previous call. Customers can sense this. They'll be able to tell that you are frustrated and angry. So you really need to treat each customer as a whole new call, because they are. Doing physical activities can also release stress. If you can take a short walk between calls, do this. I have a set of magnetic balls. They're 216 little strong magnets that I play with at my desk at home. And this is also a good stress relieving technique, and you don't have to get up and walk around to do this. You can do simple stretches or squeeze a tennis or stress ball. You can take a short break.
My friend,
Go ahead.
My friend at the call center had these hand exercisers that basically looked like reverse pliers where you squeeze them together. Unfortunately, he was a bit too strong for them. So when he got them going, they squeaked and sounded like another rhythmic action. And but he was able to squeeze them quite easily. Yes, it was bad.
Last year I got a set of
silly
those.
Putty
and,
be good.
Silly Putty is good. Last year I got a set of those, and Carrie would always tell
computers.
Me, yes. No, that's okay. Play-Doh wouldn't be. Silly Putty usually sticks pretty well together.
Last time I saw your hand squeezes, they were still very unused sitting on your desk.
I've used them a few times. But when I got mine, Carrie used to say, would tell me to pretend they were a troublesome student's heads, which was, see how hard I could squeeze them.
Wow.
Yeah. Another really good tactile thing that I hate, but might be really good for some people, are koosh balls. Some people love them and love to squeeze them and play with them, and they really help some people. I think they're horrible, but that's just me.
Possibly not good in the workplace because of the noise, but I once saw a cat. It was like this sort of soft-toed cat, and it had a very long neck, and it was built so that you could throttle it, and it squeaked when you throttled it. But personally, I found it quite sad, but...
We have a chicken that does that. You can choke the chicken. It'll do the chicken dance, and you pick it up, and it will make amazing noises when you pick it up by its neck.
Oh, boy.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, there's all sorts of squeezy little toys that you can get. Probably nothing that makes too much noise. Just something for you to fidget with or play with or squeeze to relieve stress.
Is it worth pointing out
here? Some people do that when they work. Some people do that when they are in class. They find that they learn better.
Oh, yeah.
Even if the teacher's talking, if they do something like that.
It's probably worth pointing out here, though, that you should make sure that you pay attention to your job and not your squeezy toy. Otherwise, you won't have a job and plenty of time to play with your squeezy toy. So, everything in moderation.
Well, yeah.
Definitely. I always try to, when I'm on a phone, when the customer's not absolutely fuming, I try to see if I can find a way to make them laugh. It kind of, I mean, laughter is always the best medicine, I find, and usually if you're trying to joke with someone, you kind of try to put yourself in a jocular mood. If you're the kind of person that can do that, it's kind of good to, you know, obviously not to detract from the work of fixing the problem, but you know, if you're waiting for that long restart or that long download of the 190 megs of the software over dial-up, then you know, you can try to make them laugh and make a bit of a game out of it and try to kind of maybe relieve some of your own stress as well. Also, thank yous are as good as back massages, but that's just
me. Totally.
I used to hate billing because, you know, with tech support, you knew the problem was solved when you hear that nice dial-up connect noise. In fact, every time I go for lunch at my job, I get a nice pleasant thrill down my spine when the debit machine in the food court would connect to the internet. I thought,
awesome.
There's a successful customer. It was a really loud one too. You could hear it all over the mall. But
unless you're like me, Aiden, in which case the dial-up noise did not mean it was fixed, so I found out the other day I actually managed to break a dial-up network.
Good job!
Oh, wow, well,
that's not
I should have called you. I might have been able
fair.
To help you fix it. Yeah, I could have helped you fix it, maybe. But with billing, you know, it always took a few days for the money to come on the account, but I realized that, oh, thank you, I can actually see my homepage, thank you so much. That just made it all worth it.
Always thank your technicians if you guys can. A lot of people won't, but if we remember to do that, we're going to make people happy. So take a short break and try to relax. There are ways to relax. Practice relaxed breathing. You guys, I actually put this in there here this year. Slowly inhale, hold, and exhale. Listen to soothing sounds. There are some really good iPod applications for this. Sound Machine is, or Sleep Machine is one of them. It costs. I'm trying to think of a good free one.
Sleep Machine is not a good one for work, Grace, because Sleep Machine puts you to sleep.
Not necessarily. It has lots of different sounds.
No. Sleep Machine doesn't. Sleep is specifically for sleep. You probably want the binaural beats applications, although that may be difficult to listen to if you've got your iPod plugged in, because it may be difficult to have your iPod plugged in and be on the phone and your computer at the same time. So watch out for that.
The Sleep Machine is the one that has like the air conditioner sound or
the waves
and stuff. I think you're thinking of the Ziz Sleep, which is different.
Yeah, no, Sleep Machine has all sorts of different sounds. Go for a quick walk or climb a flight of stairs. Eat a small healthy snack, such as almonds with lots of protein. And I actually said that about the protein. Plan your weekend. Avoid coffee and fizzy drinks that contain caffeine. And I have, yeah, right, with an exclamation mark after it written here. Go ahead.
Sorry. One of the people at the call center, one of the girls apparently, I mean, this may be just an urban legend, she got the best customer service of the year person award for a long time, and everyone wondered why. Then they looked by her desk and found that after every call she was drinking out of a brown paper bag. Now, no one knew exactly what was in the bottle, but you can guess quite a few things. So if you're the kind of person that can take any types of drinks, caffeine, Red Bull, or anything else, maybe not quite as universally accepted in moderation, keyword is moderation, and not get silly, but actually use it to help your job. Obviously, it worked for her, so I don't know if she was in tech support or customer service, but we actually...
I don't know.
You'll get so canned if they ever find out.
I actually saw this girl in the computer shop, this little Asian girl, and she was always running around the shop doing this and this and this. And I sort of jokingly said to one of the guys, how does this girl get all her energy? And he's like, oh, yeah, she drinks about 20 cans of V a day. I'm just like, you're kidding me. So I walked over and I'm like, do you drink 20 cans of V a day? And she goes, oh, yeah, about 20. I'm just like, it's going to kill you, you know.
You're going to die. You're going to die.
Yeah, some of the drinks aren't too healthy, but...
Yeah. But honestly, a lot of you won't be able to avoid caffeine. I know I sure can't. And honestly, a little bit of that to keep you awake is not the worst thing in the world.
I do on break.
It's better than falling asleep on the phone. Yes, it's happening.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
As I said, those long restarts.
Yep. Okay, next we're going to talk about something that is equally as important as customer service and stress management, and this is a service level agreement. A service level agreement, or SLA, is a contract that defines expectations between an organization and the service vendor to provide an agreed upon level of support. This is a legal agreement, and it defines the responsibilities and liabilities for all parties involved. Some of the things that might be included in an SLA, and usually are included, are response time guarantees, often based on type of call and level of service agreement, equipment and software that are supported, where service is provided, is it provided in the shop or are you going to send someone out to their home, preventative maintenance, diagnostics and part of their availability, if you're going to get them equivalent parts or it's always going to be the same part, it depends. Cost and penalties, time of service availability, for example, 24/7 or Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and so on. There might be times when you will need to make an exception to the SLA. Make sure to follow your company business rules in detail. Some of the exceptions might include the ability of the customer to upgrade the level of service or to escalate to management for review. Now, you don't want to escalate to management for review often. Not every case is going to have this happen. This should be reserved for special situations, such as a long-standing customer or a customer from a very large company that spends lots and lots of money with your company. And if a problem falls outside of the scope for these customers, you might actually send it up to management, and management may actually give you permission to help this customer for customer relation reasons.
So you're supposed to just automatically escalate to a manager person if they spend a lot of money with the company? It doesn't matter what their thing is, or do you do it if they ask?
It depends. It really depends on your company policies.
I'm just speaking for myself, but I'd kind of have a bit of a problem if someone was like, I spend a lot of money for your company, so go away, common peasant folk. I want to speak with somebody important. You know, it's kind of a not nice
There are people
attitude.
Who do that, and honestly,
I'm
a
sure.
lot... And you know what? Honestly, if you do that, I mean, you haven't... Well, I'm sure you do, but you're talking about big companies, people who spend $1 million with your company. You might want to help them with their problem if it was outside of their service level agreement.
And then also, it's not just the money, but I mean, TELUS has a sort of an informal agreement with a friend of mine who's really smart with computers, and that it's easier for him to get up to level 2, because usually you have to go through level 1 first. Once he was over at my place fixing the Mac, he was trying to get the IP address to register TELUS, or my router with my ISP, which is TELUS, and ThinkQuest in America. And so he called them, and the level 1 agent didn't understand that he was asking the intelligent question. He wanted the IP address, and so the agent was taking him through all the steps. Well, what exactly is the problem, and why do you need this? And so finally he just said, I need your supervisor. And sometimes it's not so much you common peasant folk, it's you don't have the resources to help me. I need this specific piece of information. Could you give me somebody who can actually give me this information that I need? So sometimes it's not just money.
I don't need the problem documented. I just need the solution.
Yeah.
I know what the problem is already.
I love dealing with people like that. It's so straightforward. I usually try to help them and then send them up.
But Meredith could, if she sits there with Meredith. Meredith, you could pull your speakers out so that Carol could hear. Because I won't loop back because I'm muted on your side. All right. So those might be some examples of when you'd escalate a call to.
Can we get someone remote to talk so we can make sure that the speakers are audible? Because Carol's machine's decided not to boot this morning.
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
This is a test of the remote control system. Or I should say the emergency broadcast system.
You're here.
But it will not be followed by a beep.
Oh.
Oh my god, that's awesome. Who else did that, by the way?
That was Carrie.
Okay. Nice. Doesn't one of the alarm programs actually have the emergency broadcast
yes,
system tones in it?
The actual alarm program has that sound.
I have it on my hard drive, sadly. I got it from Wikipedia. I've got all three of them.
Another sound I'm happy to be rid of now that I'm not in America.
Do you mean the actual beep or the more modern digital signal? Because now
the
they've
Morse
started
code
playing
bits.
Yeah, now they started playing this this digital signal thing for the weather alerts.
That tells your radio what county it's for, what kind of alert it is, and all kinds of stuff. Look it up on Wikipedia, and you'll wish you
which
never
is
had.
Great, except it shouldn't. Well, except it shouldn't come over the TV, because if we have the speakers loud, it can cause quite a few issues.
Okay. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. Sorry. Okay. Can anyone else think of any other reasons you might escalate to management?
If the person's been insulted by a previous tech, I had that once. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, you might. That's amazing.
I think I managed a smooth... Apparently she said she didn't know what RAM was, and he laughed at her and said she was stupid. I think I managed to smooth that one out, if I can remember. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. No.
Don't do that, you guys.
Yeah, no, don't no laughing at customers. They're calling for a reason.
Well, unless they're Daphne, then you've just gotta try as hard as you can not to laugh.
No, that's what the mute button is for. And you hold down the mute button. Although I almost lost it when the guy called in wanting to reformat his drive. He said he had his Windows his floppy in the drive wanting to reformat and sounded exactly like Forrest Gump. Do I talk to Windows support? What do I type in the box? Are they closed today? Run, Forrest, run was what I was trying not to say.
Fair enough. Who's here? We're in the middle lecture. Yep. Okay. Your job is to... provide the agreed level of service in the SLA. As I said, if there... Oh, here we go. We talked about different things, reasons you might actually want to escalate. Okay. You should be aware and understand all of your company policies regarding customers. You need to understand what you can and cannot do for them because you don't want to make promises you can't keep or do something that oversteps your role. So here are some examples of rules that might be specific to your country or company or call center environment. You might have maximum time on calls, for example, 15 minutes. Maximum call time in the queue. For example, you might only let someone be in the queue for 3 minutes if you can help it. Number of calls per day, a minimum of 30 calls. You may only pass calls on to other technicians. Example, only when absolutely necessary and not without the technician's permission. What you can and cannot promise a customer. See that customer's SLA for details. When to follow the SLA and when to escalate to management. Now, 30 calls a day sounds like a lot, but honestly, some of these calls will be 3-minute calls. No. You might have, seriously, some very easy problems to solve, and it will literally be 3 to 5 minutes on the phone. So 30 calls may not be such a big deal.
Is, you know, not plugged in or whatever
actually
kind of call.
There are actually some call centers where you have a time of 30 seconds between calls, and once you hang up from one previous call, 30 seconds later, the next call in the queue is going to drop into your... the exchange is going to drop it in, and you actually have a button that will give you another 30 seconds, but then once you've pressed that button, you can't press it again. You only get the minute, and then the call comes in. So it is aware that some of these call centers are quite high-paced.
My flatmate is a telephone counselor, and he routinely does I can't remember, I think about 300-400, maybe more, calls a day over the course of a 5-hour shift.
For a counseling? Wow, that must be pretty fast counseling.
Yeah, I'm really surprised.
Well, no, most
how do you do that? I'm going to commit suicide. Don't do it. Click.
Click.
Well, of course, most of them are prank calls and testing calls and stuff. I mean, yeah, they you know, sometimes you get calls which take half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever, but, you know, the sheer volume of calls that they deal with is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is some drive-through counseling.
Sadly, some counselors do get a majority of prank calls, and
that's really
you get
sad.
People who ring up deliberately trying to make the counselors laugh or whatever. And that's not cool, because these people are doing an important job that helps society.
Well, I always thought call time restrictions
probably get people, too, who are trying to, like, get them to say really, you know, get them to, like, snap and say something rude so that they can be, you know, like, I could have been dying or something, just to be annoying.
Yeah, totally. And people, like, fake complaints and all sorts of rubbish.
Aw.
Jeez.
Don't need lives. Yeah, like, I mean, I know I'm saying that, you know, from my bedroom on internet school, but seriously, people need lives.
Anyway. You'll also need to know rules that the company requires you to follow for your personal conduct. Here's some examples of rules that you might need to follow. Arrive at your workstation at early enough to become prepared, usually about... Don't eat your breakfast in front of your workstation. Oh. We have somebody who did. For real? Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, gosh!
We can't hear you, Carrie.
That's not so we had somebody. No, it was Carrie. He said, "Don't eat your breakfast in front of your workstation, and seriously, pile food into your mouth and talk to your customer."
Wow.
Oh wow. I had a lawyer do that actually.
We couldn't hear.
Here's the other thing: if you are blind and you're doing this, schedule your transit so that you are able to get there 10-15 minutes beforehand. Make sure your transportation is adequately padded, as I could.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're better to be early than late.
Absolutely.
It's always great.
And
when I got on the phone with the lawyer, and the first thing I heard was swallow.
Oh, you know what? And honestly, if you guys call me at home, no guarantees. I may totally break every one of these rules, but I'm at home, so that's what.
Yeah. Well, he called me, so he was like eating his lunch while he called me to deal with my dad's estate. It's like, hi, is this Aiden Stadden? Yes, what were you eating? Who are you?
Fair enough. So arrive 15 to 20 minutes before your first call and become prepared, because once these calls start dropping in, you might not get a break for the rest of your shift. Do not exceed the allowed number and length of breaks. Do not take a break or go to lunch if there is a call on the board. Do not take a break or go to lunch at the same time as other technicians, stagger breaks among technicians. Do not leave an ongoing call to take a break or go to lunch or to go to a personal appointment. Make sure that another technician is available if you have to leave. Contact the customers if you are going to be late for an appointment. If no other technician is available, check with the customer to see if you can call them back later, possibly in the morning. Do not show favoritism to certain customers, and do not take another technician's calls without permission. Do not talk negatively about the capabilities of another technician. And there you go for the rules that you might want to follow. Also,
if the fire alarm goes off, do your best to save your notes before you leave the building and tell the customer to call back later. I had that happen a couple of times, too.
Yeah, it does happen. There are emergencies where you'll have to leave your desk. Just try to explain to the customer that you've got to go, there's a fire, and that's basically that's what you're going to have to do. Another thing that you guys might not be aware of, and this happened to somebody that we know. They spent a lot of time on Facebook and taking unnecessary breaks. Your employer may never talk to you about this, but suddenly your contract will be up and you won't be hired back and you won't know why.
Yeah, they do see that kind of thing.
If you take more breaks, if you take only the easy calls, if you spend a bunch of company time on Facebook, you may never get a talking to. There may be no warnings. You just might not be employed anymore.
if you talk about work and things on your Twitter that you shouldn't be talking about on there.
If you've got your boss on Facebook and this happened, and you write chucking a sickie and doing whatever, and they're going to see it, you might get a comment back saying don't come back to work.
Yeah, that did happen, didn't
it? Yeah.
Something else slightly off topic, but something else to be aware of. When you're applying for jobs and stuff too, is people do, like, research you. People will look, and people will find your Facebooks and your Bebos and your MySpaces, and they will look at them. So be aware of, for instance, what photos and stuff you put up there of, you know, maybe you don't want to put up photos of you, you know, throwing up at a party somewhere, or, you know, it's just, yeah.
Actually, that's currently going through the courts in Canada. A woman claims she was unfairly discriminated against because of Facebook. And there's a couple of situations. There was one in the States of a person falsely Facebook impersonated. Her name was Carol Arnott in New York. And Carol Arnott in Florida, there was a photo of her doing some rather compromising things, and the New York one, who was a 30-year-old librarian, was mistaken for the 20-year-old one on Facebook, and she's now suing for, they're trying to sue for discrimination because that's fair not enough. Very fair. Yeah.
I've got to share something very amusing with you guys that just happened. We were talking about fire drills, and we seriously just had a test of the fire system while you were talking.
Oh my god. Do you guys have to go, or was it just, hey, we're making
no,
sure
no, no,
it,
it was just a test. Yeah, we
so
just
that's what that bell was. I thought it was like someone was at a train station.
No. Okay. You should always follow these common sense rules to ensure customer satisfaction. Set and meet a reasonable timeline for calls or appointments, and communicate this to the customers. Communicate service expectations to the customers as early as possible, what you're going to need to do. Communicate the repair status with the customer, including explanation for any delays. Offer different repair or replacement options to the customer if applicable. Give the customer proper documentation on all services provided. Follow up with the customer at a later date to verify satisfaction. Something on repair times. If you're able to estimate a repair time reliably, tell them. If you're not, be honest with them and don't estimate the repair time. I don't know how long this is going to take because we've got parts from another manufacturer. I'm not sure how long this class is going to take because I don't know how much people are going to talk. I've been estimating these classes, and I've been quite wrong about how long they are. So I'm not really estimating because, honestly, we've never had a class which is as talkative as this one, which is really good. I like that people want to share things, but I can no longer estimate how long the classes are going to take.
Sorry about that.
And customers, I don't mind, and customers will come back at you and say, you didn't do this in this timeline. So if you think that a manufacturer is going to take a while to actually get parts to you, you need to tell your customer that right away and not estimate something that you can't promise to abide by.
I appreciate it when they're honest and say, you know what, we don't know how long it's going to take to prepare your whatever it is, because that, at least I know that they're not going to just make something up, because I could so see them doing that.
And it does, it does make you look really shady and sleazy and dishonest when you're not able to meet your estimations.
Cab drivers do that a lot. Instead of being honest with you about the time, they just make something up.
Oh, totally. So it does not make you look good. If you can't estimate reliably, don't. And just be honest with your customers. And they might be really annoyed about it at first, but when that debt comes back and you say, here it is, they're going to respect you for it a heck of a lot more. All right. It is important to be ethical and operate within the law because you're a business. And you don't want to get audited and go to jail. You might think certainly that this pirated software, no one's going to find out, but tell you what, you're a business. You're going to get audited, or your customer is going to get audited. And would you like a side of lawsuit with that? If your customer gets in trouble for having pirated software that you provided them? Because they will totally come back on you, even if they say they knew all about it and all of that, because they'll just totally deny it to the police, and guess what? You're the one to blame. So really, don't do it, guys. Always be respectful of customers and their property. This includes any data or information you come into contact with, such as email, phone lists, records of data on the computer, or hard copies of files, information or data left on the desk, any of that. Now,
yes,
this is pretty common.
Yes, don't download Nikki Hilton's information from a cell phone company and post it on eBay. Including Slim Shady's contact number. That happened once at a call center in Texas.
Wow. Always ask for permission before using a customer's computer. This may seem really common sense and might... Well, they've asked me to come help with their computer. I shouldn't have to ask permission. Before you touch that, before you turn that on, ask again, because then you have... If you gather information such as usernames and passwords and have to document it, really you shouldn't, but if you have to, you must keep it confidential. The burden of this is on you, because it's usually against the law to give this information to anybody. And the reason you don't want to document it is because if it leaks and you've documented it, you are a probable cause. Never send unsolicited, chain, or forged messages to a customer. Or from a customer's
computer.
Can
we go back to the usernames and stuff for a moment?
Yeah.
Or the confidentiality. Yeah. My friend was telling me, and you guys know who I'm talking about. There was an incident where a husband said, "Oh, I want an account reset," and it turned out that the couple was divorcing, and this person was trying to get like services from a homeless shelter, and because they just assumed, oh, he's the husband, we'll just reset it, and he got into all of her stuff, and that's just really bad. So it's to kind of make sure that if only one person if one person's name is on the account, don't let anyone else, I mean, because it's going to come back on you. Make sure that the person who wants to make changes to the account is the person you're actually dealing with. And if they're not, then you probably shouldn't be doing anything like that.
Yeah, we'll make sure they're documented as, you know, documented who called in and, you know, what they said. And if make sure the husband is a documented person on the account.
That's what I mean.
Of course, it's always good for the
third party.
It would have been good, not blaming, but it would have been good for the wife to call in and say, "Hey, we're getting divorced. Please take his name off my account.
Please lock this account down."
Yeah, from him.
It isn't her fault.
He's no longer an authorized person. No, it isn't. Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, it's good to make sure
that would have helped. But honestly, if you're getting divorced, is that what you're going to think about, really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, definitely. But you know,
absolutely.
Just make sure to change permissions.
I mean, that may not be the first thing on your mind, is all I'm saying. Eventually.
Of course not.
Our phone company did an interesting thing with me the other day. This is the same thing I was talking about before when I broke the dial up. I wanted the username and password and stuff that my flatmate uses to get to check the internet, but the account's actually in his name. I thought it was in both of ours, but it's in his. But the phone company was very good, and they actually rang him, and they said to me, have you got a contact number for him? And they actually rang him and verified who he was, and then asked him, you know, this person's asking for this information, can I give it to them, sort of thing, or can I reset the account, is what they wanted to know, and then they just reset the password for me and told me the username, and then it was fine.
Yeah, they'll do that a lot now. Here's a list of illegal activities. And this is not a comprehensive list by any means, but these are some things you definitely shouldn't do. Don't make any changes to system hardware or software configurations without customer's permission. Do not access a customer or coworker's accounts, private files, or email messages without permission. Do not install, copy, or share digital content, including software, music, text, images, and video, in violation of copyright and software agreement or applicable federal and state law. Do not use a customer's company IT resources for commercial purposes. Do not make customers' IT resources available to unauthorized users. Keep sensitive customer information confidential. Do not knowingly use a customer's company resources for illegal activities. Criminal or illegal use includes obscenity, child pornography, threats, harassment, copyright infringement, university trademark infringement, defamation, theft, identity theft, and unauthorized access.
Shouldn't that be universal trademark?
Nope, university.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Okay, the last section we're going to cover before our quiz is call center environments, which we've basically covered pretty well already. It's your job to provide the specified level of support in the customer's SLA. You might work in a few different types of call centers. You might work at a help desk for one company's internal employees. You might work at a call center for, say, a cable or phone company providing service to their customers. Or you might work at an independent call center that provides or sells services to various companies or various customers for outside technical support. You'll probably work in a cubicle with a chair, desk, at least one computer, phone, and a headset. You may have different technicians have different levels of experience and knowledge and may specialize in certain hardware, software, or operating systems. All call centers have some sort of help desk support software. This hopefully will be accessible in the call centers you work in, or else you won't be working there. They will train you in how to use this software, and it is used for documenting trouble tickets, also getting information to help your customer. You might have knowledge bases, information that other technicians might have put in on how to solve various problems, and also tracking software and documentation you will need.
In some cases, it can also be used to request when you need your break to happen.
Absolutely. Okay. There are different call priorities, and we're going to go over them. The first priority will probably be a down call. As we talked about, the company cannot operate any of the computer equipment, and they're waiting on you to actually get them back up and running. This is priority one. It's going to be the most urgent. So this is hardware. One or more computers are not functioning correctly. This is going to be an urgent priority, priority two. Software. One or more computers have software or operating system errors. This is going to be a priority two, urgent. Network. One or more computers that cannot access the network. This is going to be another priority two, and urgent. And the last one is going to be an enhancement request, a request for additional functionality. This is going to be a priority three, and it's important, but not as urgent as your other ones that you need.
Do they have priority zero, the payroll person's computer's broken?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Because that's the top priority. If the payroll person's computer doesn't work, it gets fixed first, or you don't get paid.
Okay.
Well, at that point, I'm probably going to the payroll office myself and going, right, move over. I'm taking over now. I'm
yeah, right. This. Absolutely. Not that we'd really do that, guys.
Asking the customer first, of course.
Pushing her to the floor as you move her out of the chair and... No.
Do I have to do some editing? Right?
No.
I'm saying you don't probably... mind, right?
Yeah, as you're doing this. You'll probably start out as a level 1 technician in a call center. These technicians are also called level 1 analysts, dispatchers, or incident screeners.
Trained monkeys?
Yeah, something like that. Your primary responsibility as a level 1 technician is to gather information from the customer and document the relevant bits. Information you need from the customer includes contact information, what is the manufacturer and model of the computer, what OS is the computer using, is the computer using AC or DC power, is the computer on a network, if so, is it a wired or wireless connection, was any specific application being used when the problem occurred, have any new drivers or updates been installed recently, if so, what are they? And description of the problem, and also the priority of the problem. Many problems are simple, and you will be able to help the customer solve them yourself. If the problem is complex, you may need to escalate it to a level 2 technician. You will need to translate the customer's ramblings into one or two quick sentence description for the level 2 technician. This will allow them to diagnose and fix the problem without repeating questions. Here are some descriptions of common...
How you would succinctly summarize Daphne, I think.
This woman is nuts.
That's easy. You go find and replace a grandma with an empty string.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so here are some examples. You've got a customer that says, printer will not print. Through your findings... you find out the printer will print a test page, but will not print from a specific application. Mouse doesn't work. The mouse is dirty, and the user is not able to control the cursor. Cannot get onto the network. The user is not able to log into the network. The suspect might be Fifi chewing through the cable. No, not really. Monitor not working. Monitor settings have been altered. No images can be seen on the screen. Computer will not turn on. The computer will not boot to the Windows OS desktop. Huh, that sounds like one right next to me. A level 2 technician...
My cup holder's broken. It has a 4X on it.
Huh, that's your CD drive. Has been snapped off by the customer putting their coffee cup on it. A level 2 technician is also known as a product specialist or a technical support personnel. You're going to give them the fun job of possibly using remote access software or opening up the case. They're usually more knowledgeable than a level 1 technician about technology or have been working for the company for a longer period of time.
Just be careful with these, though. When you're summarizing, do not solve the problem for the level 2 technician if you don't know what the solution is. So if the user gives you a problem description, summarize that description. Don't just assume you know what the problem is, otherwise you're going to lead the level 2 technician down a garden path when they thought the problem was something that it actually wasn't. So be a bit careful with that.
There's some general guidelines to when to escalate. Problems that require opening the computer case. Escalate problems that require installation of applications or operating systems or drivers. Escalate problems that will take a long time to walk a customer through, like CMOS changes. Escalate down calls. An entire network is down and a more experienced technician might be able to resolve the issue faster. Problems that require opening up the computer. Needs a level 2 technician. I've said this. And they also can use remote diagnostic software to connect to the customer's computer, update drivers, software, access the operating system, check the BIOS, and gather other diagnostic information to solve problems. Well, there you go, guys. Are we ready for a test, or would you guys like to have Aiden do his troubleshooting exercise first? Okay. We will do that. I'm just opening it up. Everybody get into chat. All right. And Meredith and Carol, you get to work together today and just tell us your answer.
Or type it in the chat.
Or type it in. All right. All right, here we go. This is our Module 10 quiz. What is a good rule for a call center technician to follow? 1. Be proactive by avoiding speaking to upset or angry customers. Consider each new customer call as a fresh start. Follow that first impression of the customer and use netiquette. Focus on how to repair the problem while the customer is speaking. Choose now. B is right. Since we're in a call center, we're not going to be using netiquette. Question 2. Which two actions are examples of good netiquette? Choose 2. This will be a yes or no. Avoid beginning an email with a formal greeting when it is a reply. That would be a no. Always use a formal greeting. Help keep flame wars only for humanistic reasons. That's right, absolutely not. Flame wars are bad, okay? Check grammar and spelling before sending email.
Oh, could some of our students do this? That would be wonderful.
Please? That would be really, really awesome. Actually, most of you guys are really good.
Yeah, some of you are good, but sometimes you get, here's the lax that I submitted. And you're like, wow.
I'm like, what? What were you doing?
A good idea is to have your spell check, have your email spell check before sending it if you're using, like, Thunderbird. I think all of them do that. And I think
there's a bug. If you have Outlook Express installed and you upgrade to Office 2007,
yes.
Parlez-vous français, because that is the only language that will be left in the spell checker.
Yeah.
Use
mixed cases.
Fine.
What?
What?
Aiden first.
Sorry, I said that's okay for the French Canadians. they should be happy about that.
That's right, okay.
What were you going to say, Luke?
I was going to say, even just read over, I mean, it's not perfect, but, you know, even just read over the email with JAWS before you send
totally.
If you can't be bothered spell checking, that'll pick up
most
things at least.
No, you can be bothered spell checking, thank you, otherwise we'll just fail you now, okay? Because you will spell things phonetically and Eloquence will say them correctly. This is the problem. For example, I thought WikiLeaks was Wikileaks because I relied on what Eloquence said. It turned out that it wasn't. So please, and we do ask you all at the start of this course, spell check your stuff. At a university, you would actually fail for not spell checking. We're a bit nicer than that. We'll give you a few chances. But we will insist on a resubmit if something is too badly spelt, and we have in the past.
I did, and I did just this week, and I'm looking at this, I'm like, I was just like, you know better. You can't submit this. You need to look this over and redo it. And I have asked for resubmits, only on the grounds that you didn't spell check. And it's not because I'm trying to be a mean person, but if you turn that into work, people are going to think you are an unprofessional slob.
I honestly sometimes check my case notes at work because those are legal documents, so I really
And sometimes
want to
I seriously can't read what some people write.
My boss sometimes catches things. Unless you just don't know how a word is spelled, seeing it in Braille is not going to help you if you don't catch that it doesn't look right.
That's true. Okay. You can while you're typing.
Here's another blindy one. Use mixed case in emails instead of uppercase and all lowercase. Is that a yes or no? Yes, that is actually an etiquette rule. Can anyone tell me why?
Uppercase is considered shouting.
Oh my god, that was creepy. And we said it
and
the
lowercase,
same.
And lowercase. Yeah. And lowercase. Doing all lowercase looks sloppy.
Actually, the reason you use uppercase in the places that you do is because in small quantities, uppercase letters are actually easier to read for sighted people, so they highlight the beginnings of sentences and proper nouns. However, uppercase in excess becomes difficult to read. There's actually done studies on pattern recognition as to which letters and which fonts are actually easier to read and are more absorbable. So it's actually a matter of information assimilation.
I just thought of something else, too. If you are sending HTML email, which is some people say is evil, and let's say you're low vision and you need to blow it up to 24 points so you can see it, guess what? Your recipient's going to also see it at 24 point and go, what the heck? Why am I receiving these huge letters?
That's a good point. And what is good for one person may not be good for another. We had a computer job where my ex-wife went to go over and fix the computer, and the person had it at 7x on a 21-inch monitor, whereupon she sat 5 meters away on the couch and read the screen because it was that big.
Oh, fantastic.
Nice.
Wow, it must have
been another thing. Yeah. Another thing that blind people do, we had somebody, and I don't know, remember who it was, that would send the emails, what was it, on white on white?
No, it was black on black. And they used to set the colors to black on black, and they reckoned it was really funny because sighted people had to drag the mouse down to highlight it to read their messages. And it was just really tedious. I think I upset them mightily when I temporarily banned HTML attachments on the list after they did that.
They probably should still be.
Yeah,
I would think.
No, I can't. I can't ban HTML email because every email client sends it out by default, and some of them don't put a plain text attachment in. For example, MacMail sticks 4 HTML attachments in and not a plain text equivalent, so you can't do that.
Yeah, I set mine to plain text just on principle because so many email lists have conditioned me to not set it as HTML, but I better check that in MacMail while I'm thinking about it.
Well, I would recommend people check. What you can do for a lot of email clients, and this is true for Outlook Express, it's true for Thunderbird, and I'm sure it's true for MacMail. If you have the lists in your address book, and if you do have the addresses of mailing lists in address books, please do not upload your address book to Facebook and send spam everybody, because the mailing list will be spammed. But if you do have the mailing list address contacts in your address book, you can actually check a box that says send stuff only in plain text, and for certain lists that's important, especially when you're giving commands to a list server. List servers do not decode HTML email. You need to send it in plain text, or your unsubscribe request will not be honored.
I confused my grandparents by accidentally setting my address that way in their address book, and they wanted to send me an e-card or something, and they wondered why. It asked them, do you want HTML? And they're like, we don't know what to choose. So I said, no, choose that. HTML for the...
Okay, question 3. What is an SLA? Is it an itemized record detailing a level of service performed on equipment covered by a manufacturer's warranty? B. Legal agreement between a customer and a service technician confirming specific services performed on equipment not covered by any warranty? C. Legal agreement between the customer and the service vendor confirming a specific level of support? D. Legal record of customer inventory showing all expenses were approved prior to repairing equipment. Choose now. Congratulations, guys. That's absolutely right. It's C. 4. What is the primary responsibility of a level 1 technician? Determining the cause of complex computer problems? Gathering information from the customer? Using remote desktop software to connect to the customer's computer? Or resolving computer problems that require opening up the computer? And you're all right. It's B. Number 5. Which task would be the responsibility of a level 2 technician? Resolving computer problems that are limited to software errors? Gathering information from the customer? Directing the customer to the appropriate computer vendor for help? Or resolving computer problems that require opening the case? D, that's right. 6. Which two skills are most important for a successful technician to possess? Choose 2. A. Communications. B. Task maintenance. C. Computer repair. D. Work escalation. Or E. Computer prioritization. Choose now. Sorry. Oh, I totally did screw that up. These are yes or no, aren't they? Okay. All right, so yes or no answers. A, communications.
Choose two important skills for a technician to possess.
Absolutely. Communication is one of them, very important. Task maintenance?
I don't know what you mean.
Because honestly, what does that even mean? Computer repair? Yes, computer repair
general.
Is. Oh, these are really general. Okay. The other two, nobody would know what they mean either. Work escalation and computer prioritization.
Actually, work escalation is where you escalate something to your supervisor. That's what work escalation is.
I would have said that would have been an important one as well then.
Well, no, it says choose two, and you've got to pick the two most important ones.
Yeah. Okay, what is the proper way to conduct a telephone call to troubleshoot a computer problem? A, always gather information from the customer and escalate the problem. B, maintain the professional behavior at all times. C, ask personal questions to get better acquainted with the customer. Or D, explain the steps to help the customer understand the troubleshooting process. Choose now. B is right. Good job, guys.
Oh, we actually had somebody who worked for an internet service provider, and when this really cute girl called up to sign up for an account, he didn't bill her for any of her internet time in the hopes that he would be able to exchange the internet services for other favors. He lost his job.
Good. A user calls to report that a new computer is broken. The technician determines that the user is inexperienced and possesses a limited understanding of the computer technology. How should the technician handle this call? A. Write up a brief trouble ticket and send a technician to the customer to resolve the computer problem. B. Attempt to gather information using a simple step-by-step process to determine the problem. C. Explain the technical terms to the user to educate them so that they can describe the problem. Or D. Direct the user to several websites to help them identify the problem. Yeah, exactly.
I really like some of these animals.
Yeah, me too. They're really awesome. It's B. Good job, guys. A customer calls asking for help with an error code displayed on a computer running Linux. The technician has limited experience with Linux. What should the technician do?
Call Carrie is not an answer.
No. A. Attempt the repair anyway. B. Apologize and advise the customer that the technician hopes to receive training for Linux in the future. C. Gather information about the problem and escalate the call to a level 2 technician. Or D. Direct the customer to the websites of the manufacturer. C is right.
Although it depends on if the company actually supports Linux.
Yep.
That's always fun.
All right. 10. A computer technician wants to make sure that a customer who had been experiencing a problem with a hard drive is satisfied with that the problem has been resolved. Which of these rules help to accomplish this desire? A. Ask a level 2 technician to check on the customer satisfaction survey response. B. Call the user daily to ensure the hard drive is working satisfactorily. C. Follow up with the customer to verify that the problem has been resolved. Or D. Inform the distribution center that the customer is satisfied with the repair. Choose now. E. Because B is totally stalking.
I remember this. There was actually the story about this young person who their older brothers and sisters said to them, you know, make sure the cat is happy, keep it purring. And about every 5 minutes, this person would actually chase the cat, whatever it was doing, pick it up, put it to her ear, and then drop it and go, yep, him purring. Lucky it was a tolerant cat. But yeah.
Oh.
Wow.
Does somebody have something to say?
Actually, the CSAT might not be a bad idea. You could ask your supervisor to look at the customer's CSAT score.
But your customer's probably not a level 2 technician.
Comprehensive. No, but I mean, they could tell you, because there's usually a question on there, was the problem solved correctly? And you could look, yes, it was solved correctly. Especially when those ones where you have to, wait for a solution.
11. A technician has finished upgrading a computer and is preparing to return it to the customer. What type of information should the technician provide the customer? Advice on why additional upgrades need to be performed. Instructions on how to uninstall any device that was installed during the upgrade. All of the documentation that relates to the devices that were installed during the upgrade. Or home and business phone numbers in case a problem arises. C is absolutely right. Don't you ever do D. You will regret it for the rest of your days. All right, that's the end of the
story
test. It is time, if you guys want to stick around, for Aiden's little customer service experience, because he hasn't done one yet, and he wasn't here yesterday, and I really don't want him to miss out on this, because we had something really special planned for him. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
So
I'm glad you went out of your way. My cat's been randomly meowing every few minutes. So before I settle down to something where I actually might have to concentrate, I'm gonna go make sure he's not gonna butt in, and I'm gonna go make sure
fair
I can
enough.
Say yep him purrin. So,
yeah, fair enough.
This is going to be difficult. I'm cursed with this blasted acting talent.
Dude, you made it up.
I know, I have only myself to blame.
You came up with the scenario, I just helped. But it is fantastic.
Tell me, have you ever performed in a Shakespearean play? You reminded me of a guy from my class a couple of years ago.
Sort of. I've been in plays before.
This is probably a call that if you're a customer service person, you may never get one of them, and you'll only may get one or two in your lifetime, but this is pretty good. I'm so glad to be done with Module 10. Hey guys, you know you can take the practice final at any time, whenever you're ready to do that.
It's getting
well, he's not purring, but he's he's not making a noise. So I guess he's all right. As I get ready to roleplay and
did you pick him up and put him up
totally
to your ear?
Tech-like. Uh-huh. No, I couldn't find him.
Oh, fair enough.
But he's not periodically meowing, and I have my door closed now, so there won't be an issue.
Okay. So, your backstory, Aiden, you work for LG Electronics, and this is a call center that it's an LG call center, anyway, for LG computers. So, here you go. Answer the phone whenever you're ready.
Thank you for calling LG. How can I help you?
Hello. Yes, there is problem. I have big apologize. My new to Great America accent is bit language not best. There is very very difficult to use, I believe, your product.
Yes, sometimes products can be very difficult to use, especially with other languages. Do you have an account with LG?
I have a account, though not believe with LG. They have the credit card, but not same thing, I think.
Okay, what machine is having the problem?
I am loading into the slot and the close and the press as was told press button, it goes, it does not go. I not very technical, sorry.
You're sticking, okay. You've got a computer, you're putting something into a slot, you're pressing the button to close the slot, and it's not closing, is that right?
No, it closes, you press button after close, it does not run, makes scary noise, not running noise.
Oh, so you press the button after it closes, it makes a scary noise and not a running noise. Okay. It sounds like you're going to need to have your CD-ROM drive repaired. I'm going to have to consult my supervisor to find out exactly how to do that. Is there a light near the button that you press to close it?
Yes. Yes, button near. Do not know this CD-ROM. I place the dish and it goes and it is supposed to clean, but it does not clean.
Oh, you have a dishwasher. Okay, I thought LG computers. I must have got the company mixed up. So you're trying to. Run a dishwasher and the dishes aren't cleaning. I see. Okay.
Yes, thanks, Yus.
You're very welcome. Well, I guess the two choices are to... I guess the best option would probably be to take the dishwasher back to the store and see if they can fix it. Or we can maybe have a tech sent out to your house. I suppose sending the tech out would be the best idea. Because it's already been installed. So, only to get your contact information to do that.
Well done. And for reference, LG, or Lucky Gold Star, which is now called Life's Good, does actually make computers and dishwashers.
And what? Yeah.
Oh, that's not fair!
And I had phones. Yeah, I know, because you said LG
I said LG computers.
You said LG computers!
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
yep.
So like, it was supposed to be a company that doesn't make dishwashers, yeah. So you would have to explain
no,
you can't help me, and then I get all irate.
Yeah, no, I thought he wouldn't. Yeah, no, he was going to get all irate, but he decided that yes, he could send a tech out, which is not what... I said LG computers. You could only deal with computers, so yeah, the right response was supposed to be, I can't do that, and then Drew was going to go completely nuts. It was going to be really good.
I thought you were going to say something like, oh, well, you need to call our other division, and their number is...
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, so you cannot help! Okay. What is this? You know, and I'd just get like, yeah.
Completely
I was
going to
threaten your family and say that I had connections with the mob.
Oh, of course.
Oh, my
God. we've had similar
things. But you ruined
things.
Everything. Everything!
Actually, in Microsoft... Aw. don't...